Now, those of us at the Willamette Radio Workshop admit to a bias towards things that skew a bit old school. Case in point. Photographs, steam-powered widgets, and Sundays by the Philco. So it seems only fair to wind up tonight's performance with the piece that started this ball of radio weird rolling in the first place. A story inspired by old-time serials and penned with the pitch-perfect voice of the classic noir gumshoe, The Fixer, a serial by Sean Davis. There's a million stories in the rainy city, Stumptown, the city of roses. A million stories, most of them weird. And the weirder they are, the sooner they'll find their way to the back alley bar of The Fixer. Tonight we bring you episode one, The Duchess.
Her lips are the color of a fresh scar, and she has the kind of eyes that hit you harder than one of my long, poor Manhattans. Straight brown hair flows over her left shoulder and down over her low-cut white blouse. A dull copper locket hangs on a chain between her cleavage. There's no reason in the world a dame like her should be in a dive like the Poppy Lounge. Makes no sense. And when things don't make sense, that puts me on edge. I'm cleaning the last bum slobber from a pint glass, getting it ready for the next bum as I watch her glide from the door to the bar. She's at least 5'10", maybe 6', but with those long getaway sticks, it's hard to be sure. There's no doubt that she could be the death of a man, but that man would still be lucky in my book. What do you need?
I'm looking for the Fixer.
It's been a while since I heard that name, but it still comes hard. Sends me back years, back to when I was sent home from Iraq on a stretcher. I didn't work in the mailroom ever there, if you know what I mean. Came back half smashed and soul broke. And I was able to walk again, I missed the danger. After daily firefights, ambushes, and mortar attacks, well, all the normal was hard to care about. So I threw myself into the Portland Underground and was soon known as someone who fixed problems for people who are not, let's say, pugilistically inclined. For a while, I was the people's champion, but I messed up big. I actually fell for the last one, and it almost killed me. That's another story. Took 10 years, but maybe I finally have all those demons on a leash. And I'm not ready to let them go again. The Fixer doesn't live here anymore, doll.
My name is Yelena. I need help with problem. They say you do that.
Her big green eyes kill me. Inside them, I see all the way back to original sin. She opens with the eyes and then comes out fighting with a highly practiced combination that puts me on the ropes, pushing her hair behind her ear, a well-timed sly glance lip bite combination. I'm reeling from the jabs, waiting for the haymaker that'll send me to the canvas, and she does just that by running two fingers across the tops of my scarred, calloused hands.
They say that you would help me. They say that you're very resourceful.
Is that what they say? She slides an envelope with some greenbacks across the bar.
This is down payment.
I pick it up to see how much my reputation's worth, but before I can, her soft touch changes, and she's squeezing my hand with more strength than I figured her to have. She hits me with those beautiful green sparklers again.
This should be easy, job. I want you to simply scare off an admirer.
She places a photo on the bar, an honest-to-God 5x7 photo. Who even uses these anymore? Nowadays, it's all email, or they show you off the small screen of their phone. But no, this is a black and white photo of a tall white man with a face like a chewed ham sandwich in a high-collared trench coat.
He's from small town outside St. Petersburg.
So if he's giving you problems, why don't you tell the popo?
It's a little complicated. It's family matter.
Sure. Families are complicated.
All you have to do is scare him off. You're such a big man. You talk to him and he'll go running like little dog.
She reaches into a pocket and pulls out a napkin with bubble letter dates, times, and names of strip clubs I know all too well.
Here's my dance schedule. He shows up to watch me.
Okay, doll. I'm in. She leans over the bar, grabs my collar, and pulls me close. A wave of lavender and jasmine washes over me like a river baptism, and we're so close I feel her warm breath on my nose and cheeks. We stay like this for a moment before she whispers in the same voice Gabriel used before sending Joan of Arc to war.
Thank you. Mwah.
And she's gone and I'm back, already feeling more alive than I have in years. But $2,000 for a simple stalker case? This is bad. My first case back, and I start off by biting more than I can chew. Keep Portland weird. Sure, it's our slogan, but it goes beyond a $3 bumper sticker. Is it weird here most people don't have the slightest idea about? An otherworldliness only limited by how much you can take in. Take Jimmy, for instance. Jimmy's one of my regulars, but he's also one of a long line of religious prophets that has included Hercules, Gautama, Jesus, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, and Bob Barker. Yes, every generation or so, the one true God known by many names sends down one divine sperm, and bam! Another conception bordering on the immaculate. Of course, in our modern times, no one believes in poor Jimmy, so he spends his afternoons driving his 1960 cherry red convertible AMC Rambler to the Poppy Lounge and drinking himself into martyrdom. I use him as an informant because he tends to know pretty much everything. Jimmy looks much like a Northeast Portland Messiah should. Long brown hair, long beard, thick framed glasses, overwashed and oversized tour t-shirt from some obscure band, tight black jeans and combat boots he kept after a stint in the Merchant Marines. I've been waiting for him ever since the Russian firecracker came in. He shoots me a sign of the cross, and I know to get him a double Hendrix and four limes.
I know. It was my first vision of the day.
Should I take the job?
Seems like you already did.
Well, you should have seen her in person, Jimmy.
Oh, don't worry. I'll see her before it's over.
Where do I start?
Tomorrow, Sean.
I said where, not when, Jimmy.
Big hair dance. But today, pour me another and one for yourself while you're at it. You're gonna need it.
Big Hair Dan used to work at Cave Yeller Pizza on Hawthorne. To the untrained eye, he's just an unusually tall, gangly pizza shop manager who always wears unfashionably large sunglasses and giant tie-dye t-shirts. His perpetually worn cargo shorts reveal near impossibly long, pasty white hairless legs, and his shorts pockets are always filled with dime bags of cannabis strains with names like Northern Lights, Blue Dream, Granddaddy Purple. I was never big into the herb, but if you're a player in the Portland Underground, you need to know the names in recreational drug sales. Big Hair Dan is the head of his crew and controls most of the pot market from Alaska, Seattle, Portland to Humboldt County. God's honest truth is, Big Hair Dan's a Sasquatch. Shaved everywhere except for his dreads in order to fit into society, Bigfoot and his brothers have the best weed because they grow it organically without pesticides or hydroponics or anything unnatural. They have a network that goes all over the unexplored remote Pacific Northwest. Those Bigfoot sightings you see on YouTube? Just weed deliveries to Big Hair Dan and his boys. They used to work in pizza places and coffee shops, but now that pot's legal, they've switched to the dispensary business. I caught up to him at Brothers Cannabis Club on 36th and Division. I'd sent Yelena's stalker photo ahead. Not a good idea to show up unannounced and surprise a herd or clan or whatever a group of Bigfoot are called.
Shawnee, man! Oh, man.
Big-haired Dan answers the door and looks down at me with a giant smile, showing his thick, flat, yellow teeth.
Oh, man, I didn't think to see you again. Come on in, little brother. Come on, let's head up to my office.
I follow him into something like a high-end dentist's office. The place is filled with Sasquatch in varying degrees of hair growth stages, and since they're hidden from the public, they stand at their full height and don't hide their strength. We walk into his office in the back. It's just the two of us now. The room is a white cave with light maple hardwood floors, empty, except for a lacquered cedar stump fashioned into some sort of throne in the very middle of the room. All the gleaming white walls have giant framed prints of Portland street artists Fasai, Adam Brock, and Faith 47. He climbs up on his throne, knuckles first, and gets comfortably cross-legged.
So you sure you want in on whatever this is, Sean?
I pull out five folded $20 bills, paper-clipped in half, and toss it to him.
Okay, but listen, man, you know what a Vodianoi is?
Some type of little blue pill?
Oh, no, man. Vodianois are water ghosts, man. They're the souls of the drowned. Real mischievous, from what I understand. And he's one of them. Yeah, man, he's been seen around the strip clubs, you know. Seems to be looking for someone, from what my guys can tell.
Makes sense.
So no matter what you do, man, don't try to fight this guy by a body of water.
Got it.
I mean, that's where he gets his power from.
Okay.
I'm serious, dude.
I said I got it. Thanks, Dan.
I'm not messing around, man.
It takes all night and a few hours into the morning before I find the stalker inside the Acropolis Gentlemen's Club. Yelena dances there under the strange name Duchess. I'm going off a cell phone pic of a distorted old photo, so the face seems hardly recognizable. But when I see him, I know. He's uglier than sin on baby Jesus' birthday. His face is thin and sharp like a cemetery shovel. And he's wearing a long fur robe, moist with an ossuary sweat. He sits reeking in the shadows, beyond the video poker machines, watching as Yelena and two other girls rotate through an hour's worth of songs. The first shift finishes, and as the last girl rakes up the ones on the dance stage, the dark figure stands and exits. I follow. By the time I'm out the door, there's no sign of him. But he leaves behind a sandy film in every viscous footprint. His trail leads me north on foot down McLaughlin Boulevard and then west to the edge of the unused Acropolis Annexes building's parking lot. There's a light mist that gives the single streetlight in the middle of the gravel lot a yellow halo. The vapor in the air increases until it's almost like an ocean spray. I breathe deep and smell the pleasant scent of petrichor, but then there's something else, a rancid odor just underneath, slowly getting stronger. Big-haired Dan's words come back to me.
Yeah, no matter what you do, man, don't try to fight this guy by a body of water.
Yeah, but what if the water's in the air? This warning makes me pause. Is $2,000 worth it? No. But seeing gratitude in Yelena's emerald sparklers would be. Watching me from somewhere. I can feel it like I'd feel 100,000 ants crawling up and down my spine. Johnson Creek, damn it, ambush! Quickly, I reach into my back pocket and take out Boxcar, my sap. It's a long horse leather pocket, stitch closed with dozens of thick lead washers the size of silver dollars inside. It's got me out more than a few tight places in the past. I smack the open palm of my left hand and the slap echoes through the bushes, letting him know that I know what's about to happen. He steps out of the darkness, but he's still a shadow, like the light doesn't even want to touch that face. Used bubble gum under a diner table with sprigs and patches of what must have been a thick beard at one time randomly sticking out. But those eyes, I'm not prepared for those eyes. They're big, dark, and fathomless.
Tonight, God will hear your prayers, and I will see your tears.
Bring it, ugly.
I lunge, but he lets me come straight at him. I swing so hard, his head should exit his shoulders, but instead he turns and leers over me. I come back with Boxcar the other way, really landing a whack on his left cheek that would stagger a mule, but still nothing. I swear I get 6 or 7 belts in there before his hand shoots out at me like a striking diamondback, and his ice grip closes around my throat. My fists beat wildly at his one arm, and then I realize my legs are dangling off the ground. The world around me stretches until everything I see and hear becomes so thin I think it can tear away, leaving nothing but the dreamless black of a forced unconsciousness.
Time slows. Sound hits me one wave at a time.
Yet, Grigori, stop!
When he turns his head toward her voice, the streetlight reflects off the left half of his long face. I really see it for the first time. Dark, cavernous eye sockets too high up and too close together. Splotches of gray and blue dead skin, swollen and bloated, looking like it was left submerged for weeks. Out of his black eyes flows a heavy stream of tears down into the tangled, wet patches of beard. I use his hesitation to put all my strength into pulling away. I give it every last ounce I have and yank at his arm. Handfuls of material rip off and turn to silt in my hands. I keep grabbing and pulling. The stark odor of rotting earth fills my mouth and nostrils. Ice-cold fingers close, caving my esophagus. The light drains from my vision, dimming everything to near total darkness.
Grigori! Pajosta!
His head jerks in her direction, pelting my face with some sort of foul-smelling globs. I use his lapse of attention to escape his frozen grip. I land on all fours. The force of the winds picks up and makes his robes flap behind him, revealing a tall, horrendous sight. Through tears in his moldy boots, I see what I can only describe as talons. My gaze runs up from there, and I see the hurricane gusts making strips of his saturated, greasy skin flap angrily over shiny midnight blue scales underneath. 3 long, glistening gashes on each side of his neck open and close, almost convulsively, under straggly patches of thin beard, and his eyes, dark caverns shaped like holes in the brick wall guarding the city of Dis. I'm going out. It isn't gonna be like this. Not on my knees. I dig the balls of my feet into the gravel, set up like a track sprinter, and launch my whole weight into his stomach. Mere freezing slime coats the side of my face and neck. The smell again. Smell. Decaying fish. But I keep pumping my legs, pushing him backward until he falls on his ass with me on top. Next comes a dozen ham-fisted blows in rapid succession straight to his mass of rotted teeth. I have the advantage. No man can keep the lights on with a walloping like this. But he throws me off like dirty laundry.
Get off.
Before he does, I hook my hand under what feels like a small chain he's wearing around his neck. It snaps. I'm skidding to a stop in the rocks and dirt. He's over me, kicking my chest in. I hear cracks and I know it's the cartilage ripping between my ribs. I roll out of the way, open a swollen eye, and see Jimmy's 1960 AMC Rambler convertible smack right into the big nasty drowned Russian ghost. Now, he may be some sort of supernatural creature who out-toughed me, but he can't out-tough good old Detroit engineering and ingenuity. That mass of cherry red cast iron and steel knocks him down like wheat under a sickle.
Oh. Get a move on, kids!
Before I know it, Yelena's helping me into the front bench seat. The door closes and we're heading north, back into the city. Jimmy, this is Yelena. Yelena, Jimmy.
Yelena, hell? That's Grand Duchess Anastasia Nikolaevna, daughter of Russian Tsar Nicholas II. And that guy kicking your ass?
Grigori Rasputin.
I pop open the lock and I tore off the water ghost's neck. The one just like hers. That's his big ugly mug looking at me on the right, and her beautiful face on the left.
And that locket? He's really gonna want to get that back.
Next time on The Fixer. While Rasputin's amulet kept him alive after being beaten nearly to death, gutted, poisoned, shot, frozen, and mostly drowned, Anastasia's locket kept her young and beautiful. Now she means to put an end to his repeated attempts to take her back to the motherland and help Putin create a one-world order. Will the fixer have the grit to do what must be done? Will Jimmy stay sober long enough to help save the world? And what role will the Bigfoot brothers and the medicinal marijuana play? Find out next time on The Fixer. Thank you. We'd like to give a special thank you to publisher Laura Sandville and editor Gigi Little of Forest Avenue Press, along with the authors of City of Weird who are here. Please stand up so you can get your bow, please. Let them hear it, folks. If you're craving more weird-inspired tales, you can purchase a copy of the book right out in the lobby from one of our local bookstores. Thank you so much for joining us. We are the Willamette Radio Workshop, and we love old-time radio and new-time radio, and we love doing it for you. Thank you so much for seeing us, and we will be doing this same show again at the UFO Festival in McMinnville and back here in September with Laugh Your Dial Off. Thank you very much, and until next time, we remain obediently yours.